Welcome to Let's Get Real with Mike Robbins. Mike is a well-known keynote speaker, personal development expert, and the best-selling author of the book titled Focus on the Good Stuff and Be Yourself. Everyone else is already taken. Mike delivers life-enhancing speeches, seminars, and workshops throughout the United States and Canada, and has inspired tens of thousands through his speaking, coaching, and writing.
Hey there, welcome to Let's Get Real with me, Mike Robbins. Thanks for joining us once again here on Energy Talk Radio. Glad you're with us. I am really excited about today's show. We have a very, very special guest, someone I know you're going to love hearing from, and I'm excited to talk to, and he's someone who's really important to me in my life and my growth, so I want to tell you a little bit about him before I bring him on. First, I'll tell you about him professionally. So Christopher Anderson, since 1976, Chris has spoken to over 20,000 people about the benefits of metaphysics and spirituality, including individuals, groups, business CEOs, Olympic, university, and professional athletes, and families throughout America, Canada, Europe, and Australia. His fantastic book, which is called Will You Still Love Me If I Don't Win, is actually a guide for parents who are raising young athletes. He's appeared on some 450 radio and television stations, as well as been interviewed by magazines and newspapers across the country. He and his wife, Barbara, live right here in the Bay Area in San Rafael. And I want to tell you kind of the story about how Chris and I met. It was 15 years ago, almost exactly 15 years ago. I was a junior at Stanford, and I actually write about this experience in both Focus on the Good Stuff and Be Yourself. Everyone else has already taken both my books. When I was 20, I had a very, very severe depression, and it was sort of instigated by something that happened on New Year's Eve 1994. I got into a fight with some friends of mine got into a fight, and I got in the middle of it and ended up injuring my eye, and it sort of set off a personal kind of chain reaction within myself. Well, the bottom line was I was as upset and despondent as I'd probably ever been, and my girlfriend at the time, Jenny, who I went to Stanford with, had the opportunity to work with Chris at a workshop, a seminar that he had done for Jenny's swim team at Stanford over the holidays when they were training. And I was literally in Jenny's dorm room laying on the floor crying, and she couldn't console me or really do anything to help me. And she just picked up the phone and called Chris and handed me the phone and said, talk to this man. I didn't know who he was. I had no idea what, you know, talk to who, what. And we get on the phone, and literally within seconds, if not the first minute or two of our conversation, there was a sense of kindness and love and wisdom in his voice and what he said to me. It was like he reached into my soul and sort of behind my heart and really and kind of pulled out something. I don't even know what it was, and said, is this what you're talking about? And I felt seen, I felt heard, I felt understood in a way that I don't think I ever had in my entire life. And that started a relationship that Chris and I have now had for the last 15 years, where he has been a mentor, a teacher, a counselor, and a friend to me, and probably of all the many incredible people in my life and on my growth journey, probably the most significant and most influential person in my own growth, my own spiritual evolution, and he's had such an impact on me personally as well as my work. So I'm honored, I'm humbled, I'm a little nervous as well to introduce Christopher Anderson. Chris, welcome to Let's Get Real.
Thank you, Mike.
I'm really excited to have you here and have this conversation about life, about spirituality, metaphysics, your work. There's so many wonderful things that we can talk about. I'd love to start with just having you share a little bit about, just some of your own journey, if you will, that brought you to do the kind of counseling work that you do. You know, the wonderful work you do in terms of working with individuals and groups. What sort of put you on this path and brought you to do this?
Well, that's a question nobody's asked me for a long time.
I know it's been a while. You've been doing this for a long time, but I'm just personally fascinated. I don't even know that I know that myself, so I'm sort of curious.
I don't think you do. I don't think you've ever talked about it.
Yeah.
I was, let's see, I guess my first awakening, you might say, is to the awareness that something was going on with me was when I was 28 years old. And I was living in San Francisco, and I didn't drink. I never have drank. I still don't. Or smoke or anything. But I would go to the pubs, and I would go with friends, and I would meet people. And I was at one particular pub down in San Francisco by the pier, by Muni Pier. And I was talking to a woman that I'd met. And I realized that when I was speaking about her, I was telling her everything I did. You know, that I traveled, that I lived in Europe for a while, et cetera, et cetera. And when I finished talking, she would begin telling me everything she did. And then when I finished listening to her and she finished, I started telling her back again everything I did.
sounds
ridiculous.
Sounds like a great conversation.
Neither of us were listening to each other. And I, somewhere about the third time, I realized I was waiting for her to finish so I could continue, and it hit me that I was, I don't know if I used this term, but I was like selling myself to her.
Mm.
I was trying to make an impression. And I realized she was doing the same thing, and we were both more interested in that than we actually were in actually meeting each other and talking to each other.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the conversation, where she was talking, I realized that that's what I always did for years. It was like a domino effect, and I turned around and walked away.
Wow.
I got to the door, and I turned back and looked, and she was still talking. She hadn't noticed I'd left. which I think, you know, was just a reflection of me. I went out, and I had this little Volkswagen. I sat in the car, and I remember staring ahead as this sort of montage of, I guess, thoughts came to me and pictures, that's what I had been doing always.
Mm.
And underneath it was this great fear that I just wasn't enough. And again, those words, I couldn't form those words, but it was a feeling. And that I was always hoping people would like me. And if you asked me at the time, how you doing, you know, what's going on? Oh, great, great, you know.
Right.
I was really too scared to even be aware of what I was feeling. That awareness was, it was like a numbness that spread over me when I was in my car. And it began me thinking that things weren't as I thought they were.
Mm.
And I would say that was the beginning of my searching. The next big part where I began looking at myself was I became aware that what I did, you know, what job I had, how much money I had, really wouldn't make a difference in my life.
Mm.
That was a big one. That was the next. If I had another $1,000 a day or $1,000 a month or whatever it was, I realized it wouldn't make any difference, and that was scary. I didn't know where to go. I just knew that it had to do with how I felt about myself, not really what I was doing or what I had.
Now, how did you – I'm curious about that because I know we've talked about that before, and I know so many people, myself included, people listening can probably relate to this, struggle with that specific thing because even understanding that conceptually or intellectually, what – how did you get that to really embody that, not just understand that?
If I could tell you that, we could bottle that. You
yeah.
and I could make.
No kidding. No
you know,
kidding.
We could, you know, change the world in a sense. It's not intellectual, and there's nothing I did. In a sense, you know, where I read a book and I did this and I did that, but I was looking at my growth. I was feeling my emotions. I had begun my metaphysical journey. I was looking at my relationship with people, with my family, with my mother and father when I was younger, and currently, and in the mix of that, there was I suppose I was rumbling the foundation of my raw materials, what I would refer to as my beliefs, my thought process, my emotions, my attitudes, decisions I'd made. And I think, I guess a good way of saying this is when someone wants to change, they always find a way. They always will bring either the person or the book or the group or the experience to them that they're looking for. I think we're guided. I think we have help all the time.
Mm.
I have no doubt about that. I know that's true in my case. And we find what we are looking for, even in the, you know, strangest places or the most unexplainable circumstances. Something happens that awakens us. So there was a part of me that wanted to wake up.
Mm.
And as metaphysics go, I believe we have many aspects of us, one being a future part of us, mm-hmm. I'll call a future self, and many, we have many future selves, put it that way, nothing set in stone, but there is, you know, the kind of the low futures we could have, and there are the high futures we could have, where we took the high road, and I think parts of us guiding us are guiding us, and nudge us, and help us, and I think it came from there, but can I explain that? Can I prove that? Is there any, you know, way to really know that? No. But as I look back, how I got to where I am today talking to you, I could never explain. I mean, how did I end up there? And then how did we meet? And how did we end up, you know, we've been talking, you're right, we're friends, we talk to each other, I work with you, you work with me.
Yeah.
Over 15 years, who would have, there's no way to predict that.
Yeah.
And I've watched you grow, you've watched me grow. So in a sense, there's not a logic to a lot of what happens to us. Although we want to explain it, you know, we want to understand it, but there is a part of us that is beyond logic. Humanity is in some ways beyond logic. Our growth is not really the accumulation of houses and, you know, of books that we read or that we write or money that we attain or what have you. It's inside. It's the awareness that we come. And how do you get that?
Mm-hmm.
Some people will never have it. They're really not interested. But those who are interested, they'll find their way.
Yeah.
And is there a logic to that? Not one I can find, other than the metaphysical one that we're guided and we wanted. But, you know, there's a gap between explaining how that really works.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to take a break here, Chris. And when we come back, I'd love to delve even deeper into that, as well as talk a bit about our emotions, which I know is so fundamental to your work and how we can really start dealing with and tapping in on a deeper level to our emotions. So when we come back from the break, we'll start venturing into some of those areas. You're listening to Let's Get Real with me, Mike Robbins, here on Energy Talk Radio, and we're having a great conversation with Chris Anderson. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to EnergyTalkRadio.com. If you would like to listen to any show on demand, please go to our shows page, find the program you're looking for, and click on the View All Shows button. There you can play any show on any device that plays MP3s. We hope you enjoy this convenient feature, knowing that you're making a difference just by listening. Thanks for listening to Energy Talk Radio's informative and inspirational shows, Shifting Global Consciousness. Our fun and inspirational talk shows brighten your day, while show hosts and sponsors enjoy the experience of creating a more peaceful, joyful, and beautiful world together with our listeners. 30% of the net proceeds from Energy Talk Radio go to charities. This month, we are sponsoring the Tripura Foundation. For nearly 20 years, the Tripura Foundation has been committed to abolishing extreme poverty. Their programs seek to eradicate hunger, educate children, and empower people, ending the cycle of extreme poverty once and for all. For more information, go to the TripuraFoundation.org. That's T-R-I-P-U-R-A. Please contact us with your favorite charitable organization by emailing us at info@energytalkradio.com. Energy Talk Radio, fun and inspirational talk radio.
Hey there. Welcome back to Let's Get Real with me, Mike Robbins, here on Energy Talk Radio. Appreciate you tuning in and listening to today's show. We're having a great conversation with Chris Anderson, or Christopher Anderson, as I know he goes by professionally. If you want to check out Chris's website, go to Christopher Anderson, and that's with two N's. So it's Christopher, A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N-N, ChristopherAnderson.com. You can find out more about the work that he does, the personal sessions, his book. We're going to be talking about that throughout the rest of the show. But I know most of you are listening online, and if you're in front of your computer, just go to ChristopherAnderson.com while we're talking. You can see a great picture of Chris and his beautiful wife, Barbara. Where is that, Chris? Is that the Grand Canyon?
No, that's Sedona.
Oh, that's in Sedona. Oh, I love Sedona. Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's up by the airport road. It's one of the vortexes.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, Michelle, my wife Michelle, and I went there with Samantha, who's now almost four, when she was just 4 months old for our first anniversary, and Michelle had never been there. Man, what a beautiful, powerful, amazing place that is, huh?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So, Chris, you know, before the break, we were talking about some of your own journey into doing your own personal and spiritual metaphysical work that you've done throughout the course of your life. And, of course, you work with so many different kinds of people, CEOs and athletes and parents and, you know, people from all walks of life. And you and I have been working together for 15 years. And, you know, of all the work that we've done together and the many, many things that I've learned from you and you've helped guide me through and helped me, you know, heal and deepen in my own growth, probably the most significant theme of all that work is dealing with emotions, my emotions, or oftentimes my resistance or denial of my emotions, more specifically.
Yes, that part.
So on that note, and again, I'm sure I'm not alone in that, why is it difficult? Why is it so difficult for us to really deal with our emotions?
Well, we live in a paradigm of thinking called chauvinism, which people hear that word, but they assume that's just the suppression of women. And that's a reflection of chauvinism, but that's not what chauvinism is.
Mm.
It's a way of thinking that our world is actually in the midst of changing, but it's been with us for centuries. It essentially is seven parts, which is about everything's about appearance and perfectionism, duty and obligation, competition and comparison for your value, and a denial of the feminine energy, which would be your imagination and your emotions and your ability to perceive with those and then conceive out of that. And then the male energy, which is an elevation of the male energy, which is about action and will and then the meaning of life and intellect.
Mm.
Now, if you notice, one part, the feminine energy, deals with emotions, and that's suppressed. Chauvinism denies it. It devalues it. All the other parts are about what you do and how you act and what you're supposed to do in the book and the book of rules of life. So we're raised in a situation in our world. The thinking is in medicine, in athletics, in business, in education, in sports competition, even for young kids, that emotions are a problem. Get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't feel them. You, in the sports world, it's really big.
Yeah.
And even on TV, you'll see people like David Letterman. If anybody starts to cry, he'll say get emotional. People will say get emotional. He'll want to stop it right away and take a break.
Mm-hmm.
Some have even said, no, I'm fine. That's his discomfort with emotions. Mm. And it's not his fault or anything. He was raised that way. He believes that.
Yeah.
Men are taught it's weak to feel emotions. Mm. Women are taught they can cry, but don't be angry. Then you're judged for being an angry woman.
Right.
And men, you can be angry, but don't dare cry.
Hmm.
Well, we pick up when we're younger a way to be, a way to fit in, which is very important, particularly in our childhood and adolescent years. And one of that is don't be out of control.
Hmm.
And adolescents actually think adults are people who never get angry, never get upset, and if they do, it's very brief, and then you get over it.
Right.
Control everything. And that is the major reason people have trouble, because you're raised by parents who were raised in that same system, and they passed down that way of behaving to you. And you're also taught, you particularly and me particularly as a man, that we're weak.
Yeah.
And you see the press, they shove microphones in front of people hoping to get a tear, you know, as if, boy, that's really something. What a strong man. He didn't even cry when they don't, you know, just get that jaw crunched. Well, it makes it very difficult for people to be human.
Right.
We lose our soul, literally, when we can't feel.
Well, and it seems like from what you're saying, and I know this about working with you too, I mean, there's a set of acceptable emotions depending on our gender or the environment we're in, and then quote unquote acceptable, of course. And then there's a whole range of emotions that sort of fall outside of that. And most of us end up feeling like we're not supposed to, or like in my case, and I think this is true for a lot of people, it can be challenging to access certain emotions because I've spent so much of my life suppressing them.
That is true.
How do we, as we start to wake up to this, how do we start to access some of those emotions that we've sort of locked away, that we've decided, oh boy, not that one for me, I don't go there?
Okay, to start with, which you first started off with about, you know, there's certain acceptable emotions and certain ones that are not, excuse me, that is true. And people refer to those as negative emotions. That would be anger and rage and pain and hurt and shame. In fact, no emotion is negative.
Hmm.
They just are. An emotion becomes negative, any emotion, by the way, including love and joy and happiness, when you suppress it.
Hmm.
When you suppress it, it gets shoved in your body. And there's an energy about an emotion. They can be measured if you put little receptors on you at night. When you feel things, those receptor needles will jump. They can be measured. They're live energy, and they have power. And a lot of body stuff that happens to people when they get older isn't so much old age, rather than the suppression of emotions that have mounted up over years that are expressing themselves through the body. Anybody doing body work will know that. Anybody working with emotions actually will know that. So, first of all, the first thing is there aren't any negative emotions. They can become negative, but they in themselves are not negative. When we don't feel them, it's much like a tapestry. Tapestries are, say, a wall mounting of a carpet. It's meant to be rich with full of colors. We'll make the emotions the colors. When you suppress emotion, whatever it may be, the colors start to drain from your life.
Right.
And your life becomes a washed-out tapestry without much feeling. Which is where I was when I had that awareness that the money or what I did or anything wasn't going to do it. It had to be something beyond that. What I found is one of the easiest ways to access emotions was to write about it. And there are many people who have absolutely no idea how to feel their emotion.
Right.
Even people who work with other people.
Absolutely.
Because they were raised in the same situation about let's understand everything, and yet without our emotional awareness, it's very difficult to have a full understanding. We need both emotional and the intellect.
Right. Well, and it's one thing. I mean, one of the things I know you and I've talked about over the years, for me, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, I can talk about my emotions and understand them intellectually. But again, the experience often of feeling them, that for me, and I think for a lot of us, is, you know, where the gold really is, but also where the challenge is for a lot of people. So if there's anyone listening, and I imagine there are a few who are often in their heads and really in their intellect and have a harder time really getting into that emotional place. How do we access that, Chris?
One of the best ways is to write a letter. In other words, you might take something like, what events or relationships are you angry at that bring up anger when you think about it, things that have happened to you, and make a list and then prioritize the top, say, three, and write, not a letter to that person that you're ever going to send or a letter that you're going to send to anybody or anybody's ever going to read, actually, about maybe an event that happened to you that you're angry about. You just write, in a sense, a stream of consciousness, a stream of emotion.
Hmm.
And it may be, I hate when this happened and this, and I hate it and I hate it and I hate it. You just may write that for a whole page. The idea is writing can bring out emotion. It's like a pulling a thread out of a sweater. It's very valuable and it can be extremely useful in getting to emotions. And the key with this is to write until there's no more feeling. Now, some people may say, well, that'll be for days, that'll be for hours.
Right.
It actually won't. It's too toxic. You'll shut off after a certain time. I did one anger letter, for instance, I'll call it an anger letter, for 2 hours.
Mm.
One. And I've done a lot of anger letters, but that was just the first one. Most of them can be anywhere from, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes to 30 or 40 minutes, sometimes an hour. So an effective way when you're first beginning this is to write a 3-day letter where you actually write and you may say, you know, not dear somebody, just put their name or something. You're not blaming them in a sense. You're just trying to get your anger out. So whatever words help, and without being polite or anything, just use whatever you can to bring the anger up.
Mm.
And then write until there's no more and sign your name. In a sense, you're communicating with your subconscious where everything's stored.
Yeah.
Then you fold the papers up, you put them somewhere like in a drawer, hidden away, like they've been hidden away, your emotions. Pull them out the second day, read it. You don't have to write anymore. Add whatever there is if you feel more anger. Fold it up, stick it in the drawer again, and then repeat it one more time for a third time, a third day, 3 days in a row. When you finish reading it and expressing all the anger that comes, either burn it page by page or rip it up into little pieces of paper and flush it down the toilet. What is that? Water and fire as a way to destroy it. Now, I would say anybody who's working with anger, it's very important that you also work with hurt at the same time, because 90% of the anger out there that people have, and I'm guessing at that, is, let's say it's a high percentage, is brought about because people are hurt. And the reaction they have right on top of the hurt is they get angry. So if you only deal with the anger, but you don't deal with what's underneath it, the anger much acting, which you could say like a blanket covering the rock of hurt underneath, that anger is going to come back again because the hurt's still there. So in a hurt, I would suggest working with that in meditation, where you just close your eyes and have a conversation with that person, or a conversation with God, or a conversation with yourself, expressing how hurt you are, and let yourself feel the tears, the sorrow, the pain, the sadness. The words don't really cover it because it's a lot of things that may come. They're not necessarily, definable, but they are of the nature of hurt and sadness and pain, what have you. And those two together can release an amazing amount of energy in people.
Wow. Well, Chris, let me just say, you know, and everybody listening, the anger process that you just mentioned, the three-day letter and writing it down, and, you know, I've been using that technique myself for probably almost 15 years, as long as we've been working together, because it's one of the first things you taught me. And
it's in your book, too, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I lay it out in the book.
And it's in my book, too.
Yeah. Yes, I took it from Chris, everyone, just to be really clear. His book came out first. But no, it's important because I know that whenever I do that, and anger's one of those ones for me, even as a man, that I'm not that comfortable with. Because, you know, I'm a nice guy. I don't like to get angry. And so that's part of my persona. So getting into the anger in that letter and doing that technique to really sit with it and be with it is really, really powerful. And I love what you say about the hurt, which, in fact, just as you said that, even though I've heard you say it many times, it just resonated with me like, oh, yeah, I often forget that part. But that's really important to go into meditation and really work with that hurt. You know, for people who, you know, as you're talking about emotions, a lot of people listening to Energy Talk Radio who, you know, they read lots of books and pay attention to what's going on in the personal development world, if we can call it that. And, you know, we've all seen The Secret in the last few years. And I agree 100% with what you're talking about in terms of, you know, and maybe because I've been so influenced by you and your work and the way you talk about it, that emotions in and of themselves aren't negative. But there seems to be, I sometimes find myself with resistance to this, and as I talk to other people about this, this idea that, no, love is definitely better than fear, and, you know, joy is definitely better than anger. And so all these judgments that we have, and I know my experience of love and of joy feels a heck of a lot better than my experience of sadness and hurt. And so can you explain that more deeply again about the whole idea of emotions not being positive or negative?
Yes, they aren't, but they can have a negative and positive effect on you.
Right.
In other words, there certainly is an impact that your emotions have. They themselves aren't negative or positive. For instance, money is not negative or positive.
Right.
But it certainly can be used in ways that can be negative and positive.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to go back to something. There's two things I want to say. The perception you had that I'm a nice guy and so I don't get angry. That is a perception. Again, that goes to chauvinism about the way to be. Whereas, in fact, if you were to suppress your anger, Mike, you would become a very angry guy.
Yes.
Because there's no way to release it, so it builds up and builds up, and you find these people who blow up on golf courses and do this, or they walk around real suppressed.
Right.
And, you know, they have heart attacks at 45 years old or 50 years old, or they have a disease. Not that that's always the cause of it, but anger is one of the most destructive emotions to your body when it's suppressed. Not expressed, when it's suppressed. You know, the thing about blowing your top?
Right.
Well, people do a lot. And, you know, if you talk to the highway patrol, how many accidents of the nature of death happen right after family arguments? So the second part is, besides that right there, just to address that, anger and hurt aren't the only two emotions. The technique I suggested there were for those two, because the big three that people want to really run from are anger, hurt, and fear. So all emotions are valuable, and all can be accessed, even in the writing technique. It's not just anger and hurt. Those are two specific emotions that can be very effectively expressed in that way. Because, you know, if say, you're angry at someone and you want to express that, and here's where the negative part comes in the impact, people can only hear so much anger.
Right.
And what often happens is people use anger as blame.
Mm.
And therefore, it scares people.
Yeah.
How many people have been hurt by someone else's anger? And then he said, well, I was only angry. I didn't mean it.
Right.
Well, the fact is they did. At the time they were saying it, they did.
Sure.
And people don't trust them after that. They're afraid of what they're going to do when they're angry. Because what? Suddenly when I'm angry, I have license to do whatever I have. Then I can apologize afterwards because I was just angry.
Mm.
Not very responsible. And very hurtful. So there are emotions that not only can be used towards other people, but when we feel them, as you were talking about, sadness, shame, hurt, pain, despair, rage, they don't feel very good.
No.
And the reason why is because they're contracting in their energy.
Mm.
Whereas love, happiness, joy, laughter, excitement are expanding in their nature.
Yes.
It's the nature of the emotion. But here's what people don't know, or let's say most people don't know. It's not common knowledge. You don't hear people talk about it. If you ask people what's the deepest emotion, ooh, the big one, most people will go to rage or anger or something like that.
Mm.
Actually, the deepest emotion is love.
Mm.
And all other emotions come from love. So how, why would you be angry? Well, people get angry when they're not loved the way they want to be loved.
Mm.
They feel hurt when they're not loved the way they want to be loved. They feel despair when there's no hope of more love. Meaning, your reality can love you, God can love you, your friends can love you, life can love you in a sense. There's many forms of how people will look upon love. So, if we don't feel our angers and our hurts and the array of emotions that are contracting, they end up sitting between us and love and joy and all the expanding emotions. We got to go through those in a sense to get to the other. And to the degree that we suppress any of those contracting emotions, or by the way, any expanding emotions, a lot of people are very afraid of feeling love.
Yeah.
We end up suppressing all our emotions.
Well, and
that's why it's so important to feel our emotions.
Well, and I love that you're saying this and sharing this with everybody listening. And one of the challenges I know that I've experienced and many people I've worked with over the years have talked about too, and a lot of times, particularly with these more quote-unquote negative emotions, the ones that are constrictive that we relate to as negative, but as you're talking about, they're just emotions, they're just energy, it's about expressing them, it can be challenging to find safe places to do it or people with whom, you know, who have enough capacity, enough space, enough awareness to be able to hold that anger or that rage or that hurt or that sadness because, you know, my experience of it is, and I sometimes have found myself on the opposite side of that too, whereas, whoa, someone gets really sad or angry and it's hard for me to be with, although in my own growth it's continued to expand. How do people find safe places in their life or people or situations to be able to start to express their emotions more authentically?
Well, it's a very good question because when you do get angry at someone, normally speaking, they react with a defense. And very often, as you're well aware, by the time the conversation is over, somehow it's your fault because you're angry.
Right.
Which makes you even more angry.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem with that is that people have so many reactive emotions suppressed inside themselves that things get reactive and the parts of them, this goes to metaphysics and spirituality that I work with, we have many aspects of us, a child, an adolescent, which psychology in the 90s, not all psychologists, but in the general sense of psychology, pretty much turned into concepts. And they aren't. We do have a real child in us. We do have a real adolescent in us. And those parts of us are terrified that there's something wrong with us, that we've got to fit in, we've got to say the right thing. So when someone gets angry at us, someone tells us we've hurt them, our first reaction, generally speaking, is that there's something wrong with us.
Mm.
And then we end up defending that, never hearing the person.
Yeah.
So first of all, it takes practice in a relationship. It takes practice to talk like that with each other.
Yeah.
Second of all, the reason why I suggest a letter as a way of doing it, you can also close your eyes and use your imagination in meditation just to visualize, is because that is safe. No one's going to talk back to you. And you can have the full expression of your emotions without needing to worry about someone turning against you or shutting down or having a reaction that really prevents you from expressing it. Or they get it. You know, after 5 minutes, they really get it. They accept it. But you got another, you know, 20 minutes of anger.
Right.
Now, so what do? Well, I'm not done. Well, I get it. Well, you know, you really did what you needed to do. They got it. But
right.
You still need more anger. So one way to do that is to either finish that conversation in a letter or a meditation so you can express it.
Right.
Or do it before you have the conversation.
Mm.
So you blow the, how should I say, the spark off the anger, the charge off the anger and the hurt.
Yeah.
Then you communicate what you felt in that meditation. Look, this brings it up for me. And
yeah.
I might add one more thing that is really outside the norm of knowledge. Nobody makes anybody angry. And that's a big one for people.
Mm.
The anger, the hurt, the sadness is already inside of it.
Right.
And so what happens is, things trigger it, and somebody can say something to us, and it can have an impact on us, and that impact brings up anger inside of us. We generally will blame that person for making us feel what we're feeling, whether it be despair or anger or hurt or excitement, when in fact those emotions are inside of us.
Yeah.
And when you go to the metaphysical side, if you're carrying a lot of emotion, say suppressed anger or hurt or fear, you're putting out a resonance, and I discuss it on my website, like a tuning fork.
Right.
You're tuning out there a certain resonance, a tone. And if that says it's holding anger in it, you will attract back to you events or relationships that will give you a way to express that anger.
Yeah.
We do create our own realities, and it's not accidentally. Even those people are actually doing it. You're not, it's like we're not making them do that.
Right.
But we're attracting the kind of situations in our life, whether it be relationship or events, where things will go wrong or things will talk to us, and we'll have a way, we'll find a way to express what's being held inside of us. That's
yeah.
why it's so, I don't want to use the word dangerous, not necessarily dangerous, but let's say it's, you want to be cautious about what we suppress, because it will come back to us in our life.
Yeah, I think so many of us can look in our lives and see that. Absolutely, Christian. And we're going to take another break here. When we come back, it'd be great to talk even more about metaphysics and spirituality and how you work with people in your sessions. I know how you work with me, but I want to share that with everybody listening. We're talking to author, counselor, workshop leader, Christopher Anderson. You can check out his website at christopherandersonwith2ns.com. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little more with Chris about metaphysics and spirituality. You're listening to Let's Get Real with me, Mike Robbins, here on Energy Talk Radio. And we'll be right back.
Galileo's head was on the block. The crime was looking up the truth. And as the bombshells of my daily fears explode, I try to trace them to my youth. And then you had to bring up reincarnation over a couple of beers the other night. And now I'm serving time for mistakes made by another in another lifetime. How long till my soul gets it right? Did any human being ever reach that kind of light? I call on the resting soul of Galileo.
Thanks for listening to EnergyTalkRadio.com. If you would like to listen to any show on demand, please go to our shows page, find the program you're looking for, and click on the View All Shows button. There you can play any show on any device that plays MP3s. We hope you enjoy this convenient feature, knowing that you're making a difference just by listening.
Please tune in to listen to Life Without Limitation with Mike Michaud. Explore stories of miracles, wellness, prosperity, and enlightenment through sound meditation and transformational thought processes. The show is inspired by and based on the teachings of spiritual leader Dattatreya Shiva Baba, the YouTube guru, who inspired best-selling author Dr. Wayne Dyer to write Manifest Your Destiny. The show is hosted by Mike Michaud, a student of Dattatreya Shiva Baba who experienced miraculous recovery from HIV and AIDS over 7 years ago and survived a major heart procedure without anesthesia through meditations taught to him by Dattatreya Shiva Baba. Please visit our schedule page to learn when you can listen to Life Without Limitation with Mike Michaud.
Hey there, welcome back to Let's Get Real with me, Mike Robbins. Having a great conversation today. Oh, that Jackson 5 song puts me in a good mood. We dance at home with our girls listening to the Jackson 5, so it was just a very nice memory I had there at the moment. We're talking to Christopher Anderson, author and counselor and workshop leader. Chris and I have worked together for the last 15 years. He's made a profound impact on my life and my growth, and just really enjoying having this conversation here with Chris. If you want to check out his website again, it's Christopher Anderson with two N's, ChristopherAnderson.com. Find out more about him and the personal sessions that he does. You can find out a little bit about his book, Will You Still Love Me If I Don't Win, which we might get a chance to talk about briefly here before we're done. But I highly recommend going to his site and looking at what he has to say there. And if it really resonates with you and what we've been talking about resonates with you, contact him and find out more about the sessions that he does, because life-altering, life-changing for those of us who are on our growth journey and really dealing with different things in life and ready to make some changes and heal and go to a whole deeper and new level in terms of our awareness and understanding. So, Chris, before the break we were talking, you know, and a lot of the conversation has been, you've been referencing metaphysics and spirituality, and I know on your website, right there on the homepage, that's right what it says, metaphysics and spirituality. So when you say that, because those words, you know, have lots of different connotations and understandings to people, what do you mean specifically, and how do you use that in your work with people?
I would say metaphysics is a way of looking at, a more accurate way of looking at who we are, which would be meta, meaning the many levels of the physical, that we are not just physical, that we exist in a non-physical state, a light being state. We have many levels of consciousness. There are many levels of consciousness, and we exist, well, you might say concurrently on all of them. In other words, there's many dimensions of expression. Physical is one. In a way, you could look at a diamond with the aspects of a diamond. There are many thousands of them. If you look at them from a distance, you could see that all those aspects are part of a diamond. If you take a microscope and just go right down and focus on one, you wouldn't know there's other aspects that same time, because you're only looking at that one. That would be maybe one lifetime.
Right.
All the other aspects would be the physical lifetimes you have available to you to live. Some you use, some you don't. That's only the physical. The diamond's just on the physical. The diamond's sitting on something else, which is bigger than the physical, which is sitting within something else, which is bigger than that. All of those are metaphysics in the sense of looking at who we are. And there are certain techniques and tools that you can access those parts of your subconscious, your unconscious, and the many aspects of who you are to explore and discover that. Spirituality would be the actual experience of that, particularly when it comes to your soul, when it comes to the guts of who you are, your emotions, your spirit. The experience of being who we are is beyond physical, that we are loved, very much so, by God, Goddess. I'll include the feminine energy in that. By our higher consciousness, by our soul. So the experience of that, discovering that, you could say is really what our growth is all about, becoming more of who we really are. And metaphysics then being the tools and the way of looking at that, a vessel of information, a holding of how we look at that, and then the spirituality of who are we really. Some people just stay and focus here, you know, I want more of this, I want more of this, and metaphysical tools can do that, can be very useful in healing things. Of many emotions that you have and things that have happened and changing. And spirituality is the sense of timelessness.
Well, and how do we not get caught up, just in hearing you talk about it so eloquently, it, you know, resonates with me so personally, but how do we not get caught up in our own arrogance or our own ego about our understanding or our definition of spirituality, of what God is, because it seems, you know, that conversation or that discussion or that conflict, whether it's within us personally or with other people, seems prevalent. At least I notice it quite a bit in my own life.
Well, first of all, it's very personal. I would, everybody has their own expression of it. Some give their power away. In other words, tell me how to do it. You know, I'll just do a book of rules, and this is how I do spirituality. Some will seek it on their own. Some will find it all around them, and it is all around us. It isn't a place. It's more of an experience. Some will say, just trust me and have faith. Some will go for an experience, actually, which is different than faith. Faith is more intellectual. Not to say that there aren't people who will use that word and have an experience. In other words, there's no right way. There's no right spirituality. There's many expressions of it. The problem, again, this is shamanism, is there are many aspects of spirituality where people insist, we're right and you're wrong. And I'm not sure how anybody could say that with spirituality. Certainly, I'm not suggesting that my definition of spirituality, which, by the way, is ever-changing as I grow, is right or wrong. It just works for me. And spirituality is a sense of being loved, a sense of being connected, a sense of growing and discovering who we are. However that works, wherever any person is valid. To suggest that, you know, someone's right and someone's wrong, how can that be? So, for me, people can have, their, in other words, what's appropriate for someone where they are in their life, is that's what they should do.
I see.
And that may change as they grow.
So how, when you work with someone newly, I mean, obviously, I've worked with you for 15 years, and we've done our sessions mostly over the phone, even though we live close, although we've done some sessions in person. How do you work with people wherever they are in their growth, wherever they are in their spiritual expression, wherever they are, you know, because I'm sure people come to you in all different shapes, sizes, and forms, if you will. You know, who do you work with, and what do you do when someone contacts you?
Well, generally speaking, I have a tuning fork like everybody else.
Right.
And when people call me, they're looking for what I have to offer, even though they may not know how to express that. So it's not that I get people from all walks of life in the way they think. I get people from all walks of life, but most of the people who call me are pretty open to metaphysics and spirituality of the nature I'm talking about. They may not know it at the time, but they generally are. And wherever they are, I go to that. I pay attention to what they're expressing, whether, you know, whether I sense whether they're contracted or expanding, whether their light is very bright or there's pain going on there. In other words, I go to where they are and not, I don't try and bring them where I am. I go to where they are and try and give them what they need where they are. There are certain fundamental things in life that people need to heal. Choices we've made when we're younger that are fundamental to healing. A relationship with our parents, for instance, about how we get love, how we think of love, what we decided about emotions. Those are some fundamental things that everybody can heal, no matter who they are, which will have a dramatic effect on their life, by the way. So being an adult, for instance, a lot of people consider an age, whereas in fact we move from childhood to adolescence automatically, but we do not move from adolescence to adult automatically. We have to heal our way, and we have to, in many ways, solve the problems, heal the problems of our youth, and that's a large measure of how we become adults.
Right.
And frankly, most people don't do that, and they're caught in their way of thinking and their belief systems that they learn when they're very young. And
right.
The problem that most people face is there's a gap between their age now, where they are now, and the belief systems and choices they made when they're younger about living their life. In other words, those needs that they had then, those decisions that they made then at 6 and 8 and 10 and 15, really don't apply to someone 35 and 40 and 50 and what have you. And that gap in there is why people have such difficulty living their life, and they struggle with it.
So
wherever they are,
right.
I'm going to go there to help them to start there.
And you talked earlier about the psychological concept of the child and the adolescent that, you know, many people listening are aware of, at least conceptually. But how can people start, people who are listening, how can we start to really work with our child and our adolescent, not in concept, but in actuality, so it makes a difference in our life right now.
Well, one way is to realize that, you know, our future and our past and our present, in a sense, are all existing at the same time, except our focal point is now. And if I can just say that, you know, it's more experiential as you work with it. But you can go back and visualize when you were younger and go back almost to that kid you were when you were 5 and 6 and 7, for instance, as, you know, like you would a neighborhood kid down the street, only it's your kid, not your son, but it's your child that's a part of you. You're,
right.
It's been called inner child, but I don't like to use that word because it becomes so intellectual.
I see.
And talk to him and love him or her. You can have a relationship with that one as like a big brother, as a friend, not as a father or a mother, but as a friend, and talk about life, about what their fears are. Help them as you would a child down the street, and love them, generally love them. It took me a long time, by the way, for me to actually get that I loved my child.
Mm.
Whereas before I went, well, because he needs me. As opposed to I went because I actually enjoy seeing him. And having that relationship with my child changed my life because he was scared and insecure a lot of the time, his whole life. As I began loving him, as I began spending time with him, you know, playing bucket sand, taking him for a walk on the beach,
Right. Literally
just visualizing it has a realness in the impact in my subconscious. So I'm not changing my history, but I am changing the way I feel about my history, which is oh so important.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's so, I mean, just want to underscore that, because I know in my own life and my own growth and my work with you and as people are listening, again, it's not a concept, and you've continued to teach me this and remind me this, that that child and that adolescent are living, breathing right now, not back in 1970, whatever, you know, because we think in that linear way that it's very real. You know, Chris, we have just a couple minutes left here, and I want to mention to everyone listening, of course, you can visit Chris's website, ChristopherAnderson.com, as I've been talking about, and get in touch with him through his site, find out more about the, you know, counseling work that he does. Chris also does workshops and speaks and does wonderful things with groups that, you know, you can invite him in to do that. But your book, Chris, which I know came out a few years back and is specifically focused, it's called Will You Still Love Me If I Don't Win? And you wrote it for parents of young athletes to help them really deal with their emotions. But I got to say, I mean, I read the book when it first came out, and so much of the work and so much of what you've been talking about here in our conversation is in this book. Whether someone listening actually has young kids who happen to be athletes, that's an added bonus. But I think the book itself is really valuable regardless of, you know, where you are in life and your circumstance. Can you say just a little bit briefly about what people might get out of the book if they were to pick it up?
Well, you're correct. A lot of people have read the book who don't have children, but they relate to it from being children and how their parents treated them.
Yeah.
The book really was written, I used to work with young athletes and travel around the country. I don't anymore, but I did. And what I saw, the biggest problem was parents didn't really understand their emotional impact on their children.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily their fault. It's just that it was a hard thing to do. And I wanted to write something that would have a lot of stories in it, which this one does, that would be emotional so they could read it from an emotional point of view about how more to be. It's not that whether they love their kids or not, is that the kids need support and love in ways a lot of times parents don't understand. So the idea is that kids feel things and don't want to express it. One of the things you can learn from the book, certainly, is to help. How can parents start emotional conversation with their kids? How can parents understand the need for kids to express their own feelings? That needs to be a part of sports, not suppressed in sports.
Right.
After all, having fun and laughing is an emotion or two.
Yeah.
So the idea is you can learn a lot of ways to parent, whether it's sports or not. You can also learn how you were parented and the impact it had on you and the decisions you made because of that.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people who have kids, for instance, in music or just students, and they've read this book and it applies to them. It doesn't really have to do with sports. It's just that was a focal point
right. Because
there's a lot of energy around that.
Well, and I, you know, like I said, I mean, so the book is Will You Still Love Me If I Don't Win? And everyone listening, you can find it on Amazon. And if you are a parent, which ironically I am now, Chris, and wasn't when I read your book, but got a lot out of it as it relates to now parenting, and read it in my 20s, and it made a big impact on my life personally and my growth, because a lot of what we've been talking about with Chris here is really encapsulated in the book. So, Chris, we're going to wrap up here. I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. It's really been an honor and a privilege. You know, I really care about you and love you a lot in my own life, and it's such a pleasure to be able to share you and some of your wisdom with everyone here on Energy Talk Radio.
Thank you so much, Mike. I've really enjoyed it, and thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Everyone listening, thanks for tuning in. Again, check out Chris's website, ChristopherAnderson.com. Thanks for listening to Energy Talk Radio and specifically to Let's Get Real here with me, Mike Robbins. I look forward to the next time we connect. Make it a fantastic day, night, or whatever it is.
Where are the dreams that we once
had? Thanks for listening to Let's Get Real with Mike Robbins. For more information about Mike's work, his seminars, and his best-selling books, please visit www.mike-robbins.com.
Do we forget or forgive? There's a whole lot of life waiting to live. One day we're brave enough to talk with conviction.